Good morning, and welcome to BCN News. And this is, of course, Linked AM. And a few weeks ago, we had a conversation with three gentlemen about mergers and acquisitions. And two of those gentlemen, one of them was Steve Nunn, and the other one was Marshall Wenrick. And they talked about how they'd collaborated with a very good friend of mine, Chuck May from Infliction Point Group. And of course, Chuck is a regular contributor to the show. And we've had many guests on together. And it was an intriguing conversation about how mergers and acquisitions is really a forefront of mind of a lot of companies today, because it's a great way to actually grow your business. We touched on various things within that conversation. I thought, you know what? I really want to drill down into some of these. And so today they talked about integration and acquisition integration. And I thought, you know what? Let's bring the gentleman back onto the show. And I've got the three gentlemen here. I've got Steve, Marshall, and Chuck, the great three mentors here that I have. I love these conversations that I have with them. So tell me, what is acquisition integration? Because that's a phrase that I heard in that last conversation we had, and I'd love to know a little bit more about it. Chuck?
Well, thanks for having us on again, Carl. First of all, I do want to say once again that we at Infliction were thrilled when Steve and Marshall accepted our invitation to become strategic partners. As you know, Infliction Point has been in the business for 35 years or so, helping companies scale. And one of the obvious and well-known methods of scaling is acquisitions, growing by acquisitions. And what we've learned over the years is it's really easy to say acquisition, maybe not as easy to spell, but it's a whole lot harder to do on the integration side. So again, we've seen a number of clients over the years when they're faced with that question of, do we scale by building some new service offering, et cetera, or maybe it would be easier to buy? And oftentimes they decide it's going to be easier, faster, cheaper to buy, especially they'll come to that conclusion if they haven't tried it before, kind of with the idea of how hard could this be? So what we've seen, again, over a number of years is that it often is not faster, cheaper, better. It's slower, it's more painful, and it ends up being more expensive because they weren't prepared for the integration of the two companies. So again, we at Infliction were thrilled when Stephen Marshall agreed to strategically align with us because they're experts in their field, and we want to be working with experts as often as we can. So we feel we've partnered with the national best. So the integration, the asset integration is after you make the acquisitions, then comes generally the hard part.
So what I'm actually hearing, though, and I want to throw this over to either Steve or to Marshall, that the buying isn't enough then. You can't just say, oh, instead of building it and designing it and starting from scratch, I'm just going to buy something. The buying is not just enough, is it?
Absolutely not. Good morning, Carl. This is Steve. No, buying gives you a second business, but you haven't really got the value you were that you're after. You know, the deal team who helped you put the deal together had a vision and usually a business model of what they want to achieve when the businesses are humming together, everything's great. But it doesn't happen magically. You know, you need to, it takes work to bring these together, what we call integrate the acquiring and the acquired businesses together. And, you know, it's surprisingly difficult. It sounds like common sense, but it's not easy.
So Marshall, what do you need to put in place before you can actually complete an acquisition? I mean, it sounds so simple. I mean, you know, I've been listening to you guys, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, actually, it's not that simple. And so what do you need?
Right. So there's a lot of planning that goes into the structure before you make the announcement. And what we have to remember is there's very few people that knew about the acquisition before it actually closes. And so the hardest thing to do is to get started. And if you don't plan to be started on day one, you're going to be behind the eight ball. So I think delivering the announcement and knowing that you have many different target audiences for that announcement. You have your shareholders, your employees, your suppliers, your customers. Each one of those announcements should be tailored for the content that will match what you're trying to achieve with them. And I think one of the common problems is the companies fail to focus inward for their own employees and be transparent with your own employees. It's difficult to say nothing is going to change unless you're going to operate it as a standalone entity and nothing will change. But otherwise, if you say that, you lose credibility so quickly with your internal people. And what you want to do from that day one announcement is to have a goal to generate enthusiasm, energy that spills over into everything that's going to happen after that day one announcement, because you know you can't do it alone. You need the whole company to be behind a mission statement. As Steve said, there's a reason for doing the acquisition. And then, of course, you need to maintain business continuity after that day one announcement. So you're trying to project the future and that everyone is going to be part of that future. And being ready to execute is an important part of that. So planning goes into a lot of what you're going to need to do. And a lot of that's in parallel as soon as things get started, like onboarding the staff from the acquired company. You'll need to know that they're going to be brought into the acquiring company and have them feel confident in doing that. That's just an example of some of the things you'd need to be prepared for on day one.
So Steve, you know, one of the dangers, I suppose, is like Marshall was just saying, if you're not careful, instead of having a merged and sort of harmonious, you know, integration and company, you actually have two separate companies and, you know, you're wasting money. I heard Chuck say, you know, sometimes people buy these things, but they're operating and they may be competing against each other.
Oh, my goodness. That is very much the case. Yes, we work in with companies with less than 1,000 employees, and you are often acquiring someone who you've competed against to some degree, and the, you know, it, you've got to overcome, like yesterday, before you knew about this acquisition, your competitors, now today you're in the same company. So you, people so important to this size of our business. You need people to because you're buying for its future potential, not for the clients and the contracts they've already got. So the people are going to stay, and whatever the relationship they had before has got to be managed to this afterwards, after announcement state. Oh, yeah, super important.
So there are a few things you talk about in an announcement, Marshall, didn't you? How different are things after the announcement compared to before?
You take that, Steve, and just start by saying everyone is in sales. Everyone in both companies is in sales. And what we need to do on day one is start selling to the entire set of companies that are involved. And that means starting with key employee retention. So you're really looking at retaining employees from that day one announcement and controlling the spin. So after the announcement is made, people are going to wonder, what's in it for me? Who am I reporting to? What's going to happen to my products? Who am I supposed to talk to about this, including my family? What do I say to my family? And so there's a lot that becomes different right after the announcement. Steve, do you want to pick up a couple other things?
Before you acquire a company, everything's confidential. Everything is a small group of people who who are working together and they're all excited about the deal. Maybe they're getting paid commission on the deal. Afterwards, it's now public. Now you want everybody to know about it. And so the it's a completely different environment. Now you've got, instead of these experts in how to acquire a company being involved, now you've got people in the cubicles or at the machines who you've got to bring on board and get to help you. How do we do invoicing for one company now? And the person says, well, hang on, I got a child in daycare. I got to go home now. So all so you're like, the challenges you have are after you acquire are completely different to the kids keep it secret. Everything's secret. Okay. No, now it's like everyone's on board. Everyone's got to pitch in and we need your help. And you've got to navigate these generally people issues.
So what I'm hearing is that there's these various steps and phases that you go through. You've got that pre, okay, we've got a decision that we've got to make. Are we going to acquire, et cetera? We've got to start to put together that deal dream that you talked about, that vision that they have of how this is going to work, et cetera. And then you've got to, it's very sensitive. You've got to walk on eggshells in certain times. And that's what Intista does, isn't it? That's like you help them go through all of those processes.
Absolutely. We get involved before the announcement because, as Marshall said, when you announce you want credibility, you want to get everybody on board, you're selling to the people internally. So how do you get these people on board? And we guide our clients into preparing a credible, trustworthy message when they announce. And you're always going to ask, what's going to happen to my office, my job, and my product? And to ask those questions takes a lot of preparation before you announce. So what is going to happen to the products? What is going to happen? What is going to happen to the building where they work? So we help them plan out what, in high level terms, what they're going to do before they announce to achieve this sort of, give a vision of where we will be when everything's working beautifully, the desired end state, we call it. So we get there. We then get from the high level planning into detailed planning. Now everybody knows about it. We can get into details. And then we discover the good, the bad, and the ugly about the company you've acquired, which we'll talk about another day. And then you do detailed planning and then you, I'm going to broadly brush over it and say you deliver the integration. But that's another conversation you can have.
So come on, Steve. I mean, everything goes beautifully smoothly, doesn't it? That's right. There's no skeletons in the cupboards ever. Yeah, as they say.
Oh my word!
But as you say, that is another show, and that will do that on Halloween.
Thank you.
So there was a statistic that I heard on the last show when we were just having that conversation of how many mergers and acquisitions fail. Repeat that statistic again, please.
70% of acquisitions fail to reach their objectives.
70%. I had that dramatic pause then because I wanted it to absorb into people's minds. Now, if you're really thinking, this is to the audience, okay, if you're really thinking that this is a great way for you to actually grow and scale, think about that number, okay? Think about that number. Now, I want each of you, I'm going to start with Chuck, please, talk about some of the many reasons why that 70% is such a big number. Why do mergers and acquisitions fail? Is Chuck, just one of those, and then I'm going to go to Marshall and then to you, Steve.
I would say from our experience, probably the number one reason is that the acquiring group underestimated the amount of pre-acquisition planning that needed to be done. They underestimated the difficulty that it was going to be to get it done.
Marshall, come on. I want to know your perspective on this as well, because again, it's just to me, 70%. I'm going to say it again, 70% fail. Okay, why, Marshall?
So, okay, price is what you paid. That's your sunk cost. But value is what you get. and integration delivers the value. If a company fails to budget for that integration or underfinances it, it's likely to fail. And Ernst & Young published some estimates for integration budgets that say on average it would be about 14% of the deal value should be allocated for the integration over a period of months, of course. And if you underappreciate that, as Chuck said, you underplan and underappreciate that it is going to take some work, then you're likely to not get the reward.
Steve, what's your take on this?
I'll go back to the people side, I think. I'm going to go for poor communication. That communication ties into culture. It ties into knowing what to do and getting buy-in. So I'm going to go for poor communication. It's a huge one.
Well, that sounds like it's another podcast then. I think I want to deep dive into communication. Hey, that's what we're in the business of, isn't it? Business Clash News and BCN News here. Communication. But at the end of the day, you're right. Communication, if you're not talking the same language and translation gets lost, then you're in big trouble. So, hey, guys, as always, I love this conversation. I wanted to keep this nice and sort of focused in that sweet spot of integration, etc. And then, as I say, on the next conversation that we have, we'll talk about communication. So again, thank you for joining me this morning. I know the audience are really loving this, and I'm going to put the link to the article, because you wrote an article, Steve, didn't you? I'm going to put an article on BCN News, and they can read that. And also there's an area where they can contact you as well. So again, thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for making me look very smart, because I'm not, and you are. So appreciate it.
Thanks, Carl.
Well, again, of course, that was Marshall, Steve and Chuck and Carl. It sounds like a law firm, but it isn't. Literally, we're going to be on continuing these conversations as we go along, because it's a subject that I'm actually getting very deep and interested in. And I know you guys are as well. As I mentioned, I am going to put a link into the podcast below. And you'll be able to read that article in more detail. Until the next time, as I always say, go out there, have some fun, because at the end of the day, we're in business, but we want to have some fun. But we are in business, so we want to make some money as well. So focus on that, and I'm looking forward to our next conversation. Till the next time, goodbye.